You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your breakdown and preview editions, as we have some NDSU men's basketball to talk about with an exhibition game that took place on Wednesday. And we also have to preview the Dakota Marker game. Plus, Ross has part two of his interview with Coach Richmond. So you're going to get the best of both worlds with a lot of NDSU hoops and NDSU football talk. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things for you today?
Awesome. Excited for the weekend. Came away, I think, from the exhibition game, even though it was against Division III Concordia, my alma mater. I still think that I came away more positive going into this season than I was before that game, just from what I saw from guys that will need to contribute. So I think, like I said, I'm excited.
All right, so before we get into a little bit of basketball talk here, first thing I want to ask you about, Ross, is Coach Kleiman saying on Bison 1660 that Chris Board is going to play. That's big news on many fronts. He returns from injury just in the right time to mitigate the loss of the first half for Jabril Cox. What is your immediate reaction to the Chris Board news?
Well, it's excellent, like you said, for the timing aspect of it. You never want to lose a guy like Jabril Cox, especially on a call that, you know, like we've kind of said, not necessarily something that you or I agree with, but to not have to shuffle guys around and to not have to kind of panic or play nickel the whole time or do anything like that, we're going to get a chance to see basically the preferred starting lineup and a four linebacker rotation for the first half and then a five linebacker rotation in the second half, because they'll be able to use Plank and Jordheim and Board all in concert with Nick DeLuca, who I think is now probably at a standpoint in his health where he's not coming off the field. And that's probably for the best. From his conditioning standpoint and from his impact standpoint, he should be on the field for every play. And if NDSU plays the way they want, they're only going to be on the field for 45 to 50 defensive snaps anyway.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of NDSU hoops for those of you who missed it. NDSU takes down the Fighting Ross Uglums of Concordia Moorhead, 95-46. A lot to get into there, Ross. And so the first thing I want to ask you about is, what are your immediate impressions? What are the things, first off the top of your head, when you look at this basketball game?
Well, I think the two true freshmen that really have excited Coach Richmond and that you have heard about in his conversation with me on this podcast, I thought he was dead on. I mean, I really thought Rocky Cruiser belonged. Still not really understanding how a kid like that, 6'9", can shoot the rock, just gets through the recruiting process without people paying a little bit more attention than that. But ours is kind of not the reason why. It's to enjoy what Rocky's may be able to do this season. And I really thought Tyree Edie showed just how special he can be. He shoots the ball well, attacks the rim well, was fine on defense. You could see the first couple minutes he was sort of trying to get rid of the nerves, trying to work his way into the game. But as soon as that part of the program was done, he was awesome. He didn't miss a shot. Now, he's not going to shoot 100% for the rest of the season, but he really shot the ball well and attacked well. And speaking of attacking, that was something that I saw that I really liked from Tyson Ward. There are not that many guys that are going to be able to keep a 6'6" Tyson Ward with his athleticism in the Summit League from getting to the rim. He turned into a spot-up shooter last year. It was something that he and I talked about midway through the season. And if he continues the aggressiveness that he showed against Concordia into the conference season, he's going to be a candidate, I really think, for all league. I think he could be that kind of two-guard as a sophomore here in the Summit League. But like I said, I just came away with a more positive outlook on the season than I had going in, and a lot of that has to do with some of the new contributors. But I would say most of all, I was impressed with Dylan Miller. He's always been the type of athlete that has the ability to be a high-end post in the Summit League, but he really showed the skill and the aggression that it probably requires to be a high-end athlete in the Summit League. In this game against Concordia, very limited minutes, still ended up with, I think, 7 points, 8 boards or something like that, but just incredibly aggressive. And that was sort of the knock on him and, frankly, on Spencer Eliason last season when they were in there. The post was just basically to collect offensive rebounds and play defense because they were not going to be a part of the offense, and hopefully that's something that has changed here.
All right, to get into a little bit more discussion here, I want to kind of talk about redshirting. And to lead into that, we have to talk about Tyree Edey. 16 points last night, 2 boards, 2 steals, 1 block. You look at him, he's perfect everywhere you look. 3 of 3 from the field, 2 of 2 from the three-point line, 8 of 8 from the line. I mean, you talk about the amount of newcomers on this team. I'm very curious, you know, what guys, after seeing them live now, what guys do you think are going to redshirt? What guys do you think are probably going to be seeing the floor for Coach Richmond this fall?
I just don't think you can redshirt Edey or Cruiser at this point. I think the plan has always been to redshirt Meidinger. I think they need to improve Meidinger physically and also get him kind of up to the speed of the game. I think the hope with Meidinger is that you redshirt him, and then as a redshirt freshman, he plays a little bit. But then during that third year of his career here, they'll probably want him to be kind of ready to go. And hey, 3 seasons of a 7-footer in the Summit League is great. I mean, if they can have him be, you know, a starter-level player at that time, they're going to be really excited about that. But as far as what NDSU needs to succeed this season and what Coach Richmond owes Paul Miller and A.J. Jacobson, his 2 seniors, I really think Rocky Cruiser and Ty Edey are going to have to be a part of that. You saw the pick and pop with Rocky Cruiser. He's a guy that can play that 4 position that A.J. Jacobson plays, but can play it without giving up anything from a height perspective on the defensive end, because he's going to be just as big as really anybody that you're going to play at the post at North Dakota State this season because of Spencer and Dylan's lack of elite size, but certainly big enough to play Summit League post, no question about that. And then Edey, I think, has to be your wing depth. I think with having to use Paul Miller primarily as a point guard this season, that creates a little bit of a depth question out at the wing, because you don't have a Tyson Ward coming off the bench. You have a Tyson Ward in the starting lineup. So I think your wing depth is going to be Tyree Edey. Your depth at the 4 is going to be probably Rocky Cruiser. And then, depending on how the season plays out, you're going to have either Jared Samuelson, Cameron Hunter, or Nnamdi Van Dome as your point guard there.
Sounds good to me. So do you want to set up your second part of the interview here with Coach Richmond?
Yeah, I hope you guys really enjoyed part 1 of the interview. And part 2 of the interview, we talk a little bit about scheduling and some of the difficulties that they have getting programs to come up to Fargo, but just kind of also his outlook on the season and where he thinks this program might end up in 2017-2018.
How did the true freshman look, and is anyone threatening to play this season?
Yeah, again, as we sit here today on October 25th, Ross, I don't have any specific answers for you. One of the nice things that we're able to do, we got a closed-door scrimmage this Saturday. We got an exhibition game coming up next Wednesday that they're allowed to play in, compete in. And again, I think that's big because it's different when you go against somebody else. It's different when the lights come on to just see how they react, to see how they play. But certainly, you know, very, very intrigued with a couple of them, in particular with Rocky Cruiser and Tyree Edey, guys that have come in and probably been a little bit farther ahead than we anticipated. We'll see how that continues to play out in the next week to 10 days. I don't want to not mention, Jordan Meininger and Jake Mertens. Jake Mertens has been a tremendous addition to our program. A guy that's just fun to be around. Does his job, has a toughness about him, shoots it at a high, high level. And then Jordan Meininger, it's a question that I get everywhere. North Dakota kid, 7-footer, what do you think? Jordan is, again, to his credit, when he committed to North Dakota State, I still remember the phone call. I said, why do you want to be here? He said, I want to be pushed to be the best. And he's continued to have that mindset. And again, a guy that's well ahead of where I thought he would be. Now, does he still have a long, long, long ways to go? Absolutely. And I would say, again, specifically here on October 25th, that's a guy that's really, really trending towards a red shirt. But we'll play that out here in the next couple of days, weeks.
Why is it important for your program to schedule USC, Arizona, Mississippi State?
It's a couple things. I think from a standpoint, it helps us as an athletic department. It helps us as a men's basketball program financially. There's some opportunities with those guarantee games, too. But probably even more so than that, there's a favorite quote that's been involved in the Bison Sports Arena and now here in the Sanford Health Athletic Complex is bring on the competition. And we have goals and aspirations that are bigger than just summer league championships within this program at some point, hopefully this year, sooner rather than later. And to be the best, you got to play and compete and beat against the best. And that's something that we're very, very excited about with USC, Mississippi State, Arizona.
How excited are you to bring Missouri State into the Shack? And are there any steps as a program you guys can take to get more great mid-major games in Fargo?
Yeah, that one's worked out where they're actually going to be back now for the next couple of years, which is nice and a little scary. They were just yesterday picked, to win the Missouri Valley. But again, that's going to be great exposure for our program against a very competitive Missouri Valley league opponent. And again, I think it's just a tremendous opportunity for our guys. We need to right a wrong, too. We didn't play very well at their place in the first half, and they really took it to us. As far as from a scheduling standpoint, Russ, I wish I had a great answer for you. I wish I could tell you that we're going to be able to do these things outside of recruiting and keeping in the lifeblood of bringing in the right guys and our guys within the program. Working with them, continuing to get them better, continuing to enjoy the college experience. Scheduling is the toughest thing that we deal with. The location of Fargo is removed from a lot of the other Division I programs. The success that we've had, in particular at home, I think it's 37-3 or something along those lines over the last 3 years. It's very tough to get those games. There are some things in the works. With some challenges with some other leagues that I think will help home scheduling, will help the profile of our home games for our fans that we're very excited about too. But I wish we were bringing in a Northern Iowa, Missouri State. I wish we could bring in an FBS program every year. But I'm also very realistic. Not only have done it as a head coach, now going into my fourth year, it's what I did for 7 years as associate head coach of scheduling. It's tough, and you try to be strategic with it. You try to position yourself in that non-conference to test yourselves, but also to maintain some confidence. And there's no question that this non-conference schedule is going to test us again.
Been a full year now in the Nodak Insurance Performance Center and in the Shack. How's your life easier, recruiting-wise, day-to-day?
I love it. I mean, I think everybody wants to go there right away with the recruiting piece, and I'll touch on that in a second. But the day-to-day approach, to be able to park your car, pack your lunch, come in here, and be in here the entire day without having to move around is just – it's awesome. It's really, really cool to have our full staff, to have our full support staff right under one roof is great. We're sitting in my office right now. We walk around, and in 15 seconds we can touch our locker room, the arena, the performance center, our weight room, and our training room, and our academic center. And that's just invaluable. It's fun. It's fun now in the afternoons in particular. Our guys are starting to be around more. That's what we want. That's something that we didn't have when we were at the gym building across campus. And we want our guys to be able to interact with us before practice, one of my favorite times of the day. And so I'm most happy for our guys. I really am, especially those guys like Paul, like AJ, that were through that transition where we were everywhere. But from a recruiting piece, make no mistake, there's a big eye pop when our recruits, our prospects, and their families you know, walk in. And we certainly are making sure that we're selling it. We're letting them know how it's helpful to their overall college experience. But at the very end of the day, we're still crystal clear that if you're coming here just because of the facilities, this isn't the right spot for you. North Dakota State was built a lot longer time ago than just in the last year. And we've had success with guys that want to be here because of the pride they have, what it means to be here. And if the Sanford Health Athletic Complex, the Nodak Mutual Performance Facility can get us into some conversations, great. We still need to make sure once we're in those conversations, our message is consistent.
Last question, who do you really see as the big threats in the Summit League? And what do you guys have to do this year to be successful from your perspective?
I think the biggest thing that we have to do is continue to get better on a daily basis. We certainly need to make sure that, you know, our guys, our main core guys are healthy and feeling good towards the end of the year, having a big picture perspective. But we've really got to do a better, you know, not a better job, but, you know, you go back to our first year, you get beat at Texas, you get beat at Iowa, bad, things aren't going well. Well, we didn't just panic, we just continued to work on a daily basis and continue to get better and better and better, and that really paid dividends too. I mean, it would be great for me to sit here today and pinpoint one team that I thought was just, but I mean, you look at it, you go back to last year, you know, the parity top to bottom. You look at the 1-8 game, you know, we got beat in the 2-7 game. You look at the 1-8 game last year, USD Western Illinois, that goes to overtime in the conference tournament. I think people around the country are starting to take notice of the level of coaches, the level of program investment, the level of success that the Summit League's had. And it's really fun to be a part of because it's very, very competitive on a night in and night out basis. Even when we were 7-1 last year, Ross, I think there was only maybe two games where we won by double digits. Other than that, they were fights.
All right, thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Should we talk a little Dakota Marker?
I say we get into it just a little bit. And to start it off, I mean, we got to talk about the most recent games for South Dakota State because this is a team that's been a little bit up and down during league play here. They are 3-2. And I was talking with Ross about it before in the pre-production meeting. When SDSU wins, they win big in terms of they put up a ton of points, and when they lose because they don't obviously score enough points. But the drastic split between the amount of points they have to score to win is pretty drastic. And you look at their two most recent games, two road games against Missouri State and Western Illinois, a 62-30 victory, a 52-24 victory. This is an offense that has been white hot coming into this game, Ross.
They certainly have been. I think they found something with Brady Mangarelli. They have not probably been the passing offense that many expected them to be. With that said, they're still dangerous. They still have, I would say, definitely two mid-round picks on the squad. I would probably take Jake Winicky in the third round, and I would probably take Dallas Goddard maybe even before him. I think they're both game-breaking guys and guys that you're going to see on Sundays. And when you have athletes of that level, no matter how well they're playing, they have to be respected. And frankly, now they are playing well. That might, frankly, be a product of the defenses that they're going up against, but those live rounds and the ability to continue to get better is not going to hurt going into this game at home against North Dakota State, though I think they would probably prefer to play this one in the dome. They haven't had a great atmosphere in Brookings this season, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but the weather does not look like a throw the ball 55 times game either.
No, it does not. But, you know, the recent history of the Dakota Marker, it's been in Fargo for 8 years before last season. SDSU steals it at the Fargo Dome, but then NDSU gets the last laugh in playoffs, Ross. So, again, this series has gone in NDSU's way in the last decade. But when you look at last season specifically, I mean, you have two totally different games for NDSU.
Certainly. The first game was a game that NDSU led early. Lost the time of possession battle, which they barely ever lose. Really lost the yardage battle. Had to resort to some goal line stand heroics. But then I think in the playoffs really played their best game. And of that entire season, dominated South Dakota State. basically in every aspect. They dominated the scoreboard. They dominated, you know, the yardage part of it. They had, honestly, a comical level of domination from a time of possession standpoint. And I think if you really want to draw for confidence going into this game, draw on that game. Watch that one back, because that was just North Dakota State winning up front. And I think that's where you really might see this game won by the Bison in Brookings.
All right, so let's look at the NDSU offense to start here. Easton Stick played a large role in that second game last year, 16 carries for, I believe, 86 yards and two scores. And you look at what he's done on the ground this year, he's only had one game so far in double-digit rushing attempts, and he's also dealing with a little bit of an injury, which is also affecting his passing, which is of note because, again, coming into that Western Illinois game, he had not thrown an interception, and now in the last two games, he's thrown two picks in both, plus I believe a completion percentage that overall is below 50%. So when you look at Easton Stick coming into this very important Dakota Marker game, Ross, what are you going to expect from him with his arm and with his legs?
Well, you have to hope for a continued progression, especially against a defense that has been as bad as South Dakota State has been. I think you're definitely going to see a little bit more from Stick with his legs, though he has thrown the ball well in the wind this season on the road. He's been exceptional. But you talked about four interceptions the last two games. Two of those I would definitely pin on him. One was a physical error. One was a mental error. One was an underthrow. And the other was a late ball to the front pylon that was easily intercepted. Now, one was a tip pass by a receiver, and the other, he got hit as he threw. But you're still starting to see some of those turnover issues that he had last season crop up. With that said, as a whole, the season's still very, very impressive. And frankly, both of those two interception games still became games that Easton Stick was a huge part of why NDSU won the football game. Still think he's going to be more a part of the running game, though, than the pass. SDSU is brutal against the run. They're not very talented up front. Rosenboom is a high tackle guy, but that has to do, frankly, with his defensive lineman having the inability to tackle and a lot of plays making it to the second level. I think you're going to see NDSU try to run the ball quite a bit. You're going to have Seth Wilson fully ready to go in this game. And then NDSU is back to having three backs instead of two. And that's going to be important to take a little bit of the load off Bruce Anderson, because then you have Lance Dunn, you have Seth Wilson, and then you have the Easton Stick option as well, not just running the ball straight into the A-gap with Bruce Anderson.
I mean, you mentioned Seth Wilson. I know his red shirt was burned last week. Didn't register a carry, so I'm guessing that you think he's not only going to get his first carry in this game, but he also might be getting somewhere around, what do you think, 8 to 12 touches, or what would you expect from the true freshman?
I'm not sure I would say 8 to 12 touches, maybe 8 to 12 snaps. Okay. But at this point, you know, I just think you watched last week and you're blown away by, well, okay, it was third and long. Why are you burning Seth Wilson's red shirt on third and long for one snap in a game NDSU ends up winning handily? Well, the answer to that is, frankly, because of what happened with Lance Dunn, and we didn't know about that. But Lance Dunn has a torn labrum in his hip, as we discussed on the podcast earlier this week, and is not going to be available definitely through the rest of the regular season. And we'll see how things go in the playoffs. But they needed a third back, and it was either going to be move one of the fullbacks, move Dimitri Williams, teach those guys a new position, or pull Wilson's red shirt and use a guy who's been learning NDSU's system since he got there in fall camp. And so that's why I think Wilson becomes, I believe, the third NDSU freshman to have his red shirt pulled.
So let's look a little bit at the SDSU offense, starting with the running back. You've mentioned him already, Brady Mangarelli, someone that has 77 carries, averaging 7 yards a carry on those 6 rushing touchdowns. He's having quite a year for the Jackrabbits, isn't he?
He is. He's been exceptional. He's been kind of the lifeblood of that offense because they haven't quite been able to get things going in the same way that they had last season with the passing game with Taryn Christian. From top to bottom on that offense, it just hasn't quite been at the same level. Now, I think what you might see, though, is exactly what happened to Norris and then what happened last week to Weimiller. These guys are not, these power backs are not going to have a ton of success. Both Norris and Weimiller came into the NDSU game on a hot streak, and neither of them did a darn thing against NDSU's run defense, and that's just because of how good and how deep the Bison are up front. You won't see the Jabril Cox part of that in the first half, but NDSU's a closing team anyway, and frankly, to get an angry, fresh Jabril Cox in the second half is probably not going to bode well for Mangarelli, or frankly for, you know, SDSU's designs on being able to run the football whatsoever.
That NDSU offense you mentioned during conference play, Ross, is only allowing 11 points per contest, but you look at South Dakota State's offense during conference play, they're averaging 37.6 points per game, and you look at their last four games, so the month of October, they have point totals of 49, 18, 62, and 52, so something has to give between these two teams.
It certainly does, yeah, you're right. Something has to give, and historically what we've seen is what gives is not the Bison defense. I think if you look at what South Dakota State's done, it's all well and good, but they scored 7 points against the only good defense they've played this season in Youngstown State. Southern Illinois is not good. Northern Iowa is not good. Missouri State's not good, and Western's not particularly good on that side of the ball either. I think that Stig is the kind of coach that understands style points and getting into the playoff field, because he's likely to suffer two more losses this season, if not three, and he's going to run up the score. So the eye-popping numbers like 62 against Missouri State, that's not as impressive as it is embarrassing to allow 30 to the Bears. So I'm not incredibly impressed with the offensive numbers that they've put up, just because 18 against UNI is not very good, and 7 against Youngstown is really not good.
All right, and you mentioned the weather potentially playing a factor in this game. I have the Brookings weather report pulled up right now for the game, and it looks like it's going to be a bit windy out. It's not going to be too terrible in terms of temperature if you're making the drive down. 43 degrees, but sustained winds somewhere between 15 and 18 miles an hour during the game. How do you think that's potentially going to impact the game, if it is going to have an impact at all?
Well, you know, if you're an NDSU fan, you're probably hoping for even worse weather than that. But the way that it impacts the game is that the ball is going to stay on the ground if both teams get their way. Now, that's going to end up being an advantage NDSU. Yes, Mangarelli's been very good, but these South Dakota State offensive linemen cannot block NDSU's front four, because NDSU has a front 10, and they're about all as good as the last guy that you lined up against. They stay fresh, they stay violent, they stay super aggressive. If you're going to get into a situation where you're going to have a running the ball contest, I don't care if Lance Dunn is never going to play for NDSU again. NDSU's still going to run the football based on the Rams, based on the six guys that they are giving consistent playing time on the offensive line, easily being able to out-athlete and out-physical what South Dakota State does on their defensive line.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about these SDSU playmakers. I'm sure that if you have been accustomed to this rivalry game over the years, you're well aware of the names Dallas Goedert and Jake Weinecke. Looking at Dallas Goedert in his last two games, again, there's a reason why they've been putting up 50-plus points. He went for 11, a buck 70 and 1. And then in the other game, he went for 8, 113. And then Jake Weinecke goes 3 for 61 and then 8 for 97 and 3 touchdowns last week. And that win for SDSU, both had big games against the Bison last year. And then in the playoff game, they really couldn't get anywhere. So what are you expecting to see from both of these playmakers, considering what they've done in recent weeks and what the recent past has been?
Well, they're both excellent players. Like I said earlier, I really think both guys are NFL guys and will eventually be mid-round picks. It's going to be a team effort in the defensive backfield. I don't anticipate anybody shadowing anybody. I don't anticipate Nick DeLuca or Jabril Cox following Dallas Goedert around the field, and I don't anticipate Jalen Allison to follow Jake Weinecke either. They'll just continue to play the nickel to the wide side of the field, and they'll have Allison take care of the boundary, and wherever Wanneke lines up, that's generally the way that they go. And what I've seen the most from SDSU with Wanneke is they will try and use him as a big slot. They'll play him in the slot. They'll play Goddard flexed out as well, but they can also play him in line, and they will try and stress the interior of the pass defense. Now, unfortunately for them, that got a lot more athletic this year, especially in the second half when Jabril Cox is going to be out there, because you do have a Nick DeLuca. You do have either an effective nickel in Robbie Grimsley or an effective nickel in Jalen Wimbush. And then you've got pretty much the best safety help in the FCS between Robbie Grimsley and Trey Dempsey. Those guys are just itching to make plays. James Hendricks is itching to make plays. I don't think that you could have a better setup on the interior of NDSU's pass defense to deal with these guys, especially if they're just going to continue to try and line Wanneke up in the slot. Now, if I'm SDSU, I'm probably trying to isolate Wanneke on Dom Davis or Marquise Bridges or whoever is playing that opposite side corner as much as I can. Not that they're bad players, but at this point they're still a little bit unproven, and I'm going to have my fourth-year All-American go after them.
Speaking of a potential All-American candidate, Mr. Nick DeLuca looked like he was back to 100% last week, Ross. What do you think that his role is going to be in trying to stop this Jackrabbit offense?
Well, that's, I think, the million-dollar question. I really do. I think you pay attention to what they use him to do. Last week it was as a blitzer. I think he had 2 QB pressures, 2 QB sacks, 2 forced fumbles. He absolutely terrorized Eli Dunn for the duration of that football game and caused huge problems in a quarterback that, frankly, already wasn't making great decisions on the field. I think you're going to end up seeing him used in a number of ways, though. I don't think it'll be as much as a pass rusher in this game because you can utilize him to do a number of different things. You can use DeLuca as an elite coverage linebacker, dropping down the middle of the field and taking away those throwing lanes to Dallas Goedert with his length. You can also use him as a spy if you're not going to use Jabril Cox to do that. That's the guy that they've been using to spy all season, but he's not going to be available in the first half. So if they do need a spy on Taron Christian and to send everybody else back into coverage, that guy could be Nick DeLuca as well. So I think you're going to kind of see the resume game from Nick DeLuca because I think he could make big plays in all four facets. That's run defense, spy, blitz, and cover. This is going to kind of be a tape game for Nick DeLuca.
Final question I want to ask you about, Ross. Is the SDSU season, if they are to succumb to NDSU and give up the Dakota marker, does that effectively end their season? That'd be their third loss, their third conference loss, and you look at the playoff picture that's ever approaching. What are your thoughts on if this is a loss for South Dakota State? What does this mean for their season?
I think it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on South Dakota State because right now I'm not convinced they're better than Illinois State, and unless Chris Strebler is unable to go, I cannot honestly tell you how they're not just going to lose, but how they're not going to get beaten badly in Vermillion. I don't anticipate SDSU being super effective throughout the rest of the season and winning any easy games. If they get to 5 losses, they're not getting into the playoffs. And even avoiding 4 is going to be difficult because I don't see that. I mean, we'll get to the prediction part. I don't see them winning this game. I don't really see them winning the South Dakota game either, which puts a must-win and probably must-win handily situation on their hands when they play Illinois State.
All right, so the last thing I want to touch on here, Ross, before we round out things for today's podcast, is your prediction. Looking at the lines for this game, I believe NDSU is a 7-point road favorite, over-under on 50-51. How do you think this game plays out, and does NDSU stay undefeated?
I've got Bison 30, South Dakota State 10. I think they do stay undefeated. I think they just run the ball and run the ball and run the ball some more, and by the time the game's over, SDSU is really going to be deflated because I really do see this game playing out about as well for the Jacks as it did in Fargo during the playoffs last year. I think that's the NDSU blueprint to win the game. I can't think, you know, people forget that was a completely unscouted look when SDSU beat NDSU. They won that game by running Taron Christian, which, like I said, was a completely unscouted look. Nick DeLuca wasn't in there to deal with it. Now he didn't play in the playoff game either. but they had that on film and they addressed it. I don't know what gimmick the Jacks are going to be able to come up with. I don't think a Mangarelli Wildcat is really going to do a whole heck of a lot. I think NDSU's ready for the spread. I know NDSU's ready to line up in 22 personnel and MASH. So I just don't have a high level of faith in anything that South Dakota State is going to be able to do offensively to, A, maintain possession, and, B, score as many points as NDSU is going to score on what is not a very good Jacks defense.
All right, there's your official Bison Report prediction, another NDSU double-digit victory to keep the undefeated streak going. So we want to thank you guys for listening once again. If you can, head on over to the Bison Report to check out Know Your Enemy. I spoke with one of the beat writers for South Dakota State, and his answers on this Jackrabbit squad are up there. Ross will have his preview up before the game tomorrow, so if you want some pregame reading before watching this game that I believe is at 2 o'clock in Brookings. So we want to thank you guys for listening once again. If you can, rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever podcasting app you found us at. And we'll be back next week to break down hopefully another Bison football victory. For Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.